Welcome to Leadership in the Digital Enterprise, my new podcast focusing on in-depth conversations about leadership in the digital era. I'm your host, Jim Love, and I'm the CIO of IT World Canada and the co-author of Digital Transformation in the First Person. My guest today is Philippe Johnson. He's the Director General of the Digital Services Directorate of Transport Canada, and two for one, he is the National President of the CIO Association of Canada. And he's my first interview in this new series. Welcome, Philippe.
Thank you very much, Jim, for having me here.
You have two leadership roles, as I said, both at the center of digital transformation. How do they feel? Compare the two a bit.
It's a really good question, and they are different in so many ways. I've been doing IM, IT, digital as a deputy CIO or somebody involved with applications development, et cetera, in a CIO role for the last 10 years or so. And basically just been trying to keep up with what innovation is there, technology. You know, I've been doing this job for 10 years or so. So I have to admit, I'm a lot more comfortable as a leader in that role than I have in joining as the new president of the CIO Association of Canada. It's also a totally different mandate. Obviously, we're trying to promote the profession of the CIO across the country. And I think that's a really important role, especially as what we've seen with COVID over the past 10 months. We work as a board and we have bylaws. So although I've been on many boards and I have been president on some boards, this one's quite a little bit different, but it still means that what's common to both of those positions is really creating those relationships with those key board members and understanding what their needs are and listening to them so that we can be effective in making decisions and moving things forward. And I think that's common to both of those positions in terms of leadership.
Yeah, I think we think you have power, but you really only have influence, you know, even no matter where you are in these things. And the responsibility of it being your peers, I think that adds a new realm to it as well. That's great for talk about where you are professionally. Let's talk about personally. Who are you? What are the things that define you most as a person? So tell me a little bit about yourself and what defines you as a person?
So who am I? I'm a proud Canadian. So I'm from Canada. I've lived here all my life. I am a happily married husband for over 25 years. I have two wonderful daughters who are growing up in this great new technological digital world of ours. And I've been more or less in the IMIT field in some way, shape or another, starting in the when I was in the military as a combat systems engineer, taking care of weapon systems and command and control systems and radars for over the past 25 years as well. And what defines me as a person? I consider myself to be an extremely positive person. That's, I think, something that really defines me in terms of just my outlook on life, my relationships with people. And I think being positive has been really helpful. I'm an innovator. I truly love technology. I love what technology has been able to do for our society, humanity, et cetera. I think there's been huge advantages. So I'm a huge innovator and as a leader in Transport Canada, looking at opportunities to be innovative and to leverage those technologies to deliver better services to Canadians, I think is critical. I'm a very much action-oriented person. I like to see movement. I like to see progress. I like to see successes. I like that for so many reasons. One, it feels like you're actually doing something. But two, you know, it's awesome to see teams, the way they celebrate their successes and they celebrate moving forward. Another idea, I think, for me that really defines me is I love to be a collaborator. So a collaborator is about finding ways to make others be successful. And in turn, usually that will end up making yourself be successful. So whether it's, you know, with competitors or even the competitors, there's certain ways sometimes you can be collaborative with them and figure out how to be successful. And I guess finally, as a person, you know, with the positivity and the action oriented and the innovation, I think that leads to a motivator. And so a motivator of people who really want to do their best and be challenged. So hopefully that's a good start to this first question.
That's a great start. Thank you so much. And it's so funny when you hear somebody describe themselves like this, and I appreciate putting you on the spot to do that. But when you hear that and you know the person and it rings so true, I think that's an interesting place to be listening for. So we talked about who you are and what defines you as a person, but what moment in your life most defined you?
I'm going to go with getting married to my beautiful wife of over 25 years. Hopefully that doesn't sound too corny, but I'll tell you why. And I really have a good reason for this. Prior to meeting my wife, I'll tell you a little bit about what was defining me at that time. I was a huge risk taker, but not a thoughtful or analytical risk taker. I was bullish. I was, I would say, selfish. I would say that was also probably part of my persona before I got married. I was pretty much out for myself. I was looking to see how Phil could be better and Phil could be number one. I was very competitive and I was also impatient. So I'm not sure how I survived before I met her because those were not really endearing qualities. And so, you know, meeting her, she had like a 180 degree outlook on life in terms of how she approached things. And just over time, being able to communicate with her, to share ideas and thoughts, to even use her as a mentor, you know, how to approach situations, see how she did things. I have to admit that she really steered me in the right direction. And I think that, you know, had I not met somebody like that who, you know, I respected and in this case, possibly loved, you know, obviously loved, but it really changed how my approach was with people around the workplace, friends, colleagues, etc. And she's always been there to support me. And she's enabled me to be a better person, to make better decisions, and to improve the relationships around me, which in the end has really made me a stronger leader in terms of my abilities.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with that. I'm surprised they let me live before I got married. there's some commonality there. Okay. One of the things I wanted to do with this podcast was get people to know you on all kinds of levels. Tell me about a moment in your life. We can put you on the spot here. Tell me about a moment in your life that you really think defines you. If you're going to tell the story, what would it be?
You know, I'm ready to say this story out loud because I think it allows you to be human. I would say about 2 and a bit years ago, I had a significant incident happen to me in terms of, you know, how I handled a situation, how I reacted to a situation. And like, it wasn't great, I will be honest with you. And I had to do a lot of internalizing. It's possible I had gotten too confident. It's possible that I had relaxed a little too much, and it's possible, you know, I don't know what, but from that incident though, and why I think, I know it's only 2 and a bit years ago, but it was a significant incident and it really allowed me to refocus on my priorities, refocus on how to react to things, how to be poised, how to be calm, how to react better to situations that might not be going your way. And I have to admit, it also helped me in my relationship at home with my kids, my wife, just because it just allowed me to be a lot stronger. So it was a real failure, I think, at that point in time, that, you know, I didn't just chalk it up and blame other people for my failure. I really, really took a long time to internalize and got help to try to figure out how I need to be different and to be more effective. And I have to admit that I feel a lot better about who I am and with other people, with situations, with groups. And I think I would say that failure, and I'm sure everybody experiences failures in their life, and no failure is really a failure unless you don't learn from it and grow from it. So I would say that if you put me on the spot, I think I can remember, it's still very fresh and so still very real.
I think that's something, and we'll talk about this in terms of leadership, but this is one of those things that I think is so important, and it is defining the modern leader as being able to talk about the times when you didn't hit the mark. Because the only failure, I think, is a failure, as you said, a failure to learn.
That's right.
And I remember when I was a consultant, and probably one of these times when I was talking to a client and I was saying, I've learned from my failures and all that stuff, the client looked at me and said, Jim, we'd really like it if you didn't learn anything here. And that's how organizations tend to behave, but yet we're so much richer from that. And that's that new leadership. Let's talk about that. What does this new leadership mean to you? How has the digital age changed what leadership is in your mind?
I think things happen a lot quicker. I think the speed of change, the speed of delivering new services or taking advantage of opportunities means that you need to be able to be flexible and pivot and make changes. I think from a leadership perspective, if you are inflexible, stuck in your ways, or you make a decision and you're not willing to make a change, I think that's where you will falter and fail. You need to be able to, from a digital leadership, make decisions, understand how to maybe incrementally apply those and learn, and then continue to evaluate if it's the right decision and it's the right way to go. So definitely for us, we have numerous programs, at least at Transport Canada, that we're incrementally assessing and making adjustments and determining if this is the right way to go. I think that's what's changed for digital leaders. And that's one of the more important traits that you need to have if you're going to be successful these days.
That's subtle, but that's important. I'm always talking to our people about an MVP, a minimum viable product. Get out there and learn really quickly. Is that what you're talking about in that context?
Yeah, but I think you have to be able to say, okay, we've made a decision to go this way. You're assessing it. And then you got to be able to say, if it's really not working well, like that's the tough decision. That's the tough leadership. All right, This is not where we wanted to go. This is not what we expected as an outcome. Let's make a change or let's pivot. And we have to be flexible and able to make those changes and accept those from our people and make sure that the environment within your organization, the culture, allows for you to make those types of decisions.
That's tough. That's one of the toughest things because you can't stop all the time. You'd have to know when to persevere and when to, you know, Kenny Rogers, know when to hold them, know when to fold them sort of thing. Yeah, that's a tough decision. Let's talk about people where you've learned your leadership from, and that's who would you consider to be the leader or leaders that you most admire?
Yeah, I have two people that in my career over the past 10 or so years that have really influenced me. First of all, the CIO who I worked for at Treasury Board Secretariat, Paul Girard, he really taught me so much. He was such a great mentor. He was calm, poised. He was organized. He was strategic. He really helped me out. He took me under his wing and I learned so much from him, you know, in terms of how to approach things, how to approach people, how to be human. I really thought that human approach that he brought to the table while being able to make tough decisions that were fair, I think that balance was critical and learning that from him was really fantastic. And I would say that my current boss now, Julie Leese at Transport, you know, she brought me in 2 years ago and she has so much passion, enthusiasm, excitement. And as well, she had the same things as Paul in terms of really wanting me to grow, really supporting me, supporting my career. So those types of things that they did to me, I try to do as much as I can for anybody in my groups or any persons that I'm responsible for.
Great. Could you just give me an example of just one of the things that you learned that changed your behavior in that or changed your leadership style?
So now this is just an experience I had, and this was about 12 years ago in a leadership role. And I'm going to use this example because I think at the heart of all leadership is trust. And if you don't have trust, very, very difficult to be a leader or to influence anybody. And I screwed up again, another failure about 12 years ago, where I didn't properly deal with a situation that was going wrong. And instead of looking to fix the issue or trying to collaboratively discuss or figure out what was happening, I took a blaming approach on my staff. And as soon as I did that, oh my God, that turned out badly. I kind of had lost them. They didn't feel that I trusted them. And I guess there's still ways to get the facts and to try to make people excel and understand what they're doing. But just the language and the wording and the way I did it, I had lost their trust. So the one thing after that incident is I've made absolutely clear is that how trust with everybody around me, and this is my colleagues, the people who I work for, the people who work for me, anybody I have interactions with, I make sure that I really, really will create that maximum trust relationship. And I think that's really important for leadership.
How did you recover from that? I'm fascinated. Like,
I think after 6 months, I went to another job.
Okay.
I didn't really recover from that. And that's why I think once you break that trust, and that's why I think I mentioned it as one of the key leadership qualities. If you ever break that trust with the people around you, it's so, so difficult to try to win it back.
We talk about walking the talk. We colloquialize it. We talk about these things. But to me, trust is doing what you say, and your behavior matches your words. We don't always have a great luxury to do that. There are things that happen. We're human. But maintaining that is so difficult, but so worthwhile. Yeah. I don't want to leave everybody. You've shared two failures with us, but you've had a lot of successes too in there. So what do you think is the biggest success of your career?
Yeah, I think I'll describe a couple of really important success stories. One was putting together a team that would in real time be able to look at 14 terabytes a day of data for cybersecurity. And we were unfortunately had to take this program down for a while. We had a large team where we had to look at privacy concerns. We had to look forward to awesome technologies that could actually do this. We put this in place and it helped really improve the cybersecurity of the government of Canada. So I was really, really, really proud of that because it had a GC perspective and we really made a difference. The second one, sort of on a security side as well, for about 10 years in the government of Canada, we were not able to develop and put in place a really true secret digital system that could protect government of Canada assets and information. And within a year or two, I led a cross government of Canada group, various organizations, and we literally, and this is what I think is interesting about leadership as well. And from a resilience perspective, people would say to us, it can't be done. You can't do it. Here's the issues. Here's the challenges. And people would put roadblocks. And literally, we didn't give up. And we addressed all of the roadblocks with appropriate mitigation measures. So I'm really proud of that. And we made it happen. And today there's over 25 to 30 departments since I put this in place with a number of people back in 2015 or 16. There's over 20 or 30 departments who are now able to securely exchange secret information that before they could not do that, which was making some of Canada's information assets probably vulnerable to other threat agents, I guess, if I can say it that way. So I'd say those are two pretty big success stories.
What did you learn from those? How did that change your leadership style?
So I think I already talked about resilience, and I'll just talk a little bit more about resilience. Resilience is key to leadership. You are bombarded with problems, issues, things that aren't necessarily going well in your day-to-day job, presently even as the president of CIO CAN or even as the DG of Digital Services at TC. And so you need to be smart and resilient and look for ways to solve problems and support your people with that resilience. I think that's a big thing that I learned for that Government of Canada secret system. The other piece I think that has really, really helped me based on those two scenarios is the importance of relationship building with your stakeholders, with your colleagues, with the team, etc. Those relationships that you foster and put in place were critical to overcoming some of the people who were saying, we can't do this. This is impossible. You know, I developed the relationships with them and tried to have true, honest conversations with them. And over time, with those relationships and by being resilient and smart, we were able to achieve something that previous 10 years people couldn't have done or didn't do.
Yeah. One of the things I have to say from knowing you, though, is that I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you take a pretty positive approach to people initially, at least in getting out there and getting in front of them. So do you find that helps build that rapport or those relationships? Because that's core. People need to know how to do that because it is one of the things of getting things done in government, especially, or associations, means having a lot of relationships and people who want to support you. What do you think the secret is of that?
So I would say that it's one of my strengths, but I'll also say it's one of my weaknesses at the same time. It's funny how your strengths sometimes become your weaknesses. One of my strengths is And I think you've seen that for me, Jim, is I actually truly care about everybody and I want everybody to be successful. I want everybody to be happy. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are. I respect you and I really want the best for people. So when you're developing relationships, it comes rather naturally to me to develop those because I'm interested in them as a person. I'm interested in what they need to do to be successful. I'm asking questions. I'm inquisitive. I'm curious. And I really want to see what I might have to offer to make them successful. And I don't have to fake that. And so for some people where that's less, I would say, obvious or less obvious or not their first kind of area, then that's an area of weakness probably you might want to really develop. But at the same time, it's a weakness because I get very involved and I get very emotionally attached. And sometimes you have to make tough decisions and you have to push those aside when you need to make tough decisions. So I do recognize that for the most part, like 90% of the time, it's a great asset to have that kind of outlook and that ability to just be natural and create those relationships. But it's tough when you have to make tough decisions too.
Good advice, though, for leaders, is that idea that your strengths are also your weaknesses.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to balance them and keep understanding where you're going. Yeah, that's great. A lot to think on that comment. I want to switch gears a little bit and just talk about, we've talked about leadership style. Let's talk about technology because the two come together. We're leading in favor of something. What do you think the big business or technologies that are going to, or developments that are going to have an impact on us, let's say over the next coming years, that time gets shorter and shorter when we talk about, you know, but how far forward we're thinking. But yeah, in the next couple of years, what are the things going to have the biggest impact?
You know, I have to take it from my perspective and from the various panels and things that I'm looking at. I think robotic process automation, so automation, will have a huge impact to organizations. I think that data science and artificial intelligence together, a second huge impact in the way organizations, where they put their resources and what they do. There's tons of other technologies like blockchain and the remote work now that people are like the remote work right now for sure is having a huge impact on how people work and just operate within organizations. And I do think that for many people that will continue. So in other words, I think a lot of the workforce is going to continue to be remote working. But if I go back to the robotic process automation and the AI and the data science piece, at least at Transport Canada, we've got centers of excellence for both of those that I'm leading. And both of those are requiring extreme outreach to the entire business because this impacts how they will be doing things, how they will operate for each of those kind of areas. From a robotic process automation perspective, we have bot owners that are going to be coming up. So within the business, we'll have bot owners who manage their bots in the IT area, the side. We just want to make sure that everything's working and is auditable, et cetera. So there's new roles that are going to be coming. There's as well, obviously, you know, people who are managing emails or pushing administrative tasks, those will become automated. And so there'll be a switch of the workforce. So I think that's going to change a lot what's happening. And those technologies are real now, at least for us. And we are presently got three or four areas where we've got automation and where we've got bot owners. So that I think will change how we work. And I guess the second piece, I mean, we all know that data is the new gold or the new water, whatever we want to call it. It's extremely valuable. And over the past 10 months since COVID started, we've doubled the amount of data in the world just because we've had to go digital for just about everything we do. So data and creating value out of data and information, we've been saying that for many, many years, at least for us at Transport Canada. You know, we've got a center of excellence team of various kind of data scientists, and we are moving forward to create the training programs. We've got about 30 projects on the go across the business where people are now leveraging their data to create value and to make better business decisions. So we're getting people outside again of the IT shop to become data scientists, to be able to manipulate user data. And then now we're moving to prescriptive analytics and AI. That'll be the next step in terms of how we can make improvements to the way we make decisions at Transport Canada.
For you as a leader, what are the things that you think you need to prepare for?
So a lot of the things that I mentioned earlier about being collaborative, creating those relationships, one of the things maybe I haven't mentioned, but it was to clearly articulate your vision and your goal and being able to do it in a language that people can understand and not, especially for this particular case, like how do you explain RPA from a non-technical perspective or even data science? And how do you get people to buy into this and these new technologies to demonstrate the value that this will bring to how they operate and how they might change the way they work? So that is critical, being able to clearly communicate those and make them understand the outcomes and the opportunities. It goes back to what I said before as well. You got to start small. You have to, you know, show successes and show value in each of the areas that might want to leverage this technology. And once you get some momentum and you show those successes, then you start having people knocking at your door who are like, how did you do that? Can I have some of that? How can we work together to make improvements in our area, in this area? So yeah, being able to leverage those relationships and clearly communicate that vision, I think is critical in terms of leadership of the future within the CIO/IMIT area.
Yeah, I think what I'm also hearing you saying is, and find a success and tell that story.
That's right.
Yeah, cool. So as you look forward, what are your goals for the next year or two? What do you most want to do?
Well, I'll split my goals up in two, one for my professional career and one for the association. I really love what I'm doing right now. I have a great team. We're making great strides with respect to digital transformation and digital culture at Transport Canada. It's really fantastic. I'm really excited about that. So I'm very, very happy, and I love my role. So at this point in time, I'd be very happy to continue doing that for the next 2 years. It's fantastic, and I feel engaged. Every day I wake up like looking forward to this day and seeing what I can do. For the association, well, one of our secret sauces for the association was having networking events in person. And so, you know, I have to admit that it's been a little tough. We haven't been able to do those with the association in person since COVID hit. And in fact, we had to do a virtual peer forum last year, and we're doing again a virtual peer forum in April, which is looking great though. So really, for the association, we're looking at developing digital and virtual value for our membership. And we're focused on that because we just, well, first of all, there are opportunities there. We can offer new or different services. And really, I mean, I'll be bullish. It's not the like to compare myself to the CPA Association, but they have a totally different, I would say, model than we do. But I do think that why I'm doing this as the president of the CIO Association is I believe that the more we move forward, the more that everything is digital and the more that the role of the CIO or the senior IMIT business leader and organization is critical to the success of the organization. So my goal is to provide that value to every senior IMIT business leader for them to want to join the association, see the value, and then maybe take that extra leap to wanting to increase the professionalism of this profession, like increase not the professional, but the impact of our profession. So what can we do to really create innovation together, lead Canada, you know, with truly innovative new technologies? We're very good at doing research. We have lots of great researchers, lots of great ideas, but I think the digital leaders within organizations in Canada are the ones that could put it into practice and can make it real and really drive value and productivity for Canada. So hope that whoever's listening to this sees that in terms of an opportunity, and joining the association could be bigger than just yourself, but also for the profession.
Great. Yeah. And as you look forward, like in there, and you see other leaders, younger leaders coming up, what is the biggest piece of advice you'd like to give to them?
So I'll give them two pieces of advice if it's okay, Jim.
That's okay. You got two jobs. You could have two pieces of advice. Good for you. Yeah.
I think that you really need to know yourself and be authentic. You can't try to be someone else or copy somebody else's style. You are who you are. I believe that every person has a gem, like gems inside of them. They've got, you know, a light inside of them, and you got to use that light to be who you can be. So don't go about changing yourself and whatever. So that's being authentic. And then the other piece is never stop learning. never stop looking, listening to other folks, get a mentor, get somebody you respect. So learning, continuous learning, as I said, like even just as recently as 2 years ago, you know, I went through something and I learned a really good lesson. And I think that's important. You got to be able to self-reflect and learn if you're going to be a good leader.
And on the mentorship piece, I think we'll both do a commercial for the CIO Association. It's the place where you can meet other people who understand what you're doing, because mentors come in all flavors and sizes and ages and shapes and whatever. But just to have somebody who understands what you're talking about, it's a great thing from the association. Thank you so much for doing this, Philippe. This is great.
It was my pleasure, Jim. Thank you for having me.
That's it for our first podcast in this new series, Leadership in the Digital Enterprise, focusing on in-depth conversations about leadership in the digital era. My guest today has been Philippe Johnston, the Director General of Digital Services Directorate of Transport Canada and the National President of the CIO Association of Canada. You can find this podcast and articles with more great content on this subject at itworldcanada.com. Look for our page on Leadership in the Digital Enterprise, or just go to leadershipdigital.ca. Until next time, I'm Jim Love, CIO and Chief Content Officer at ITWC, home of Canada's leading technology publications and podcasts.